Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly, all streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 85. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the show where we look past the music into the future and let you know what we think. And we always have a couple of guests to share their visions of the future with us. Joining us today, Brad Grzeziak, Ruby on Rails craftsman at BendyWorks, former Lunar Excavation Space Station life support engineer. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you along. Also, Laurent LaSalle, columnist for the CBC and Radio Canada, as well as blogger and podcaster extraordinaire up there in Montreal, Canada. Welcome, Laurent.
Thanks.
It's great to have both of you guys along. We always start off with a prediction from a listener. Scott, are you ready?
I am absolutely ready. I love these predictions, and people should keep these coming. Podcast at, what is the address? You always say it. What is it? forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Look how good I was at that. But seriously, the predictions are amazing. I'm sure today's is no different.
Let's start with Bill. Bill Snelling wrote in and said, I believe in the next few years, white space Wi-Fi devices will be released, and these devices will be co-opted by groups such as servalproject.org and will lead to a massive restructuring of our information transmission infrastructure as our devices actually become the infrastructure itself. This will continue the political upheaval currently occurring around the world as corporations and governments lose the ability to control or filter information, while the telecom industry will scream about the horror of them losing markets and how it will all end badly. The economies of the world will prosper as money spent on old forms of internet, cell phone, and cable will be spent on other things. And then he says, all hail the technolips and the freedom and bounty it will bring.
Whoa. So I think what he's saying is, because really we have that now, but it's all computers and devices that are connected to the larger internet. I think what he means is we lose we start to lose the reliance we have on the actual backbone or on major service providers. And now it's just literally information going from my handheld device to your computer. What I don't think he means is that our refrigerators and toasters and other devices will become, you know, smart enough that we can, you know, house all sorts of secret anti-government information in them in the middle of the Middle East or something like that.
Although that would be cool, too. No, it sounds like he's talking about mesh networks, right? Mesh networks finally having enough spectrum allocated to them. That's the white space part of his letter. And enough technology to make them work very easily. Brad, have you dealt with mesh networks much?
I remember hearing about a company that tried to accomplish it in mesh network a few years ago. That didn't exactly go anywhere. But I think what the submitter said without actually saying was that this is the future of net neutrality. Because if you have a mesh network where you don't care about the one bottleneck to your ISP, you can get your message out to anywhere as long as you can find some way to the destination.
Yeah, it's the ultimate distribution. It's just the way everyone sort of shares their bandwidth in a torrent right now. You could just do that for all bandwidth. You just share your connection with anyone around. And so the bandwidth would be based on how many people are contributing. Laurent, do you think that's something that could ever be practical?
Yes, probably, but I mean, who's going to arrive with that idea? Because corporation won't bring it. I don't know. Government is not interested to let actually civilians have control of the information. So, I like the idea, but I think it's like crazy ass
prediction.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, if it were. I mean, most average people that you would talk to, I think, probably already think this is how the internet works. They think they're a part of it. And I think that so that the mentality is already sort of there, at least in some markets. But if it became an actual thing, that's when it would become this sort of political and geopolitical mess that I am sure you guys are right about. I don't think this ends up happening anytime soon. It needs to be something that we can almost do under the wire that they can't detect, or at the very least that they can't control, for this to become, you know, the kind of movement that we want it to be. But average people like my mom, she thinks she's a node on the internet for all intents and purposes.
Well, and she's partly right. I mean, every computer connected to the internet is technically a node. It's just a dead-end node. It doesn't do anything. And the ISPs keep you behind their firewall for very good reasons. And in some cases, you know, won't allow you to act as a server and all of that sort of thing. But this goes well beyond that. It's the idea that that your data is going to have to be encrypted, just as it should be now. But it's going to be able to pass through everything. And I think it can happen. And I think Laurent pointed out the hurdle we have to get over, which is somebody has to allocate that spectrum. And then somebody has to put the money into making the devices. And if they can get over those hurdles, which are going to take, you know, I don't think that's a grassroots thing. It's going to take corporate lobbying to get the spectrum allocated. And it's going to take a lot of money and resources to get the devices made that could use it. But I think maybe long term, I don't know if it's quite. I'm going to be more optimistic. I'm going to say it doesn't quite have to wait to crazy heads.
I think we're basically talking about the second internet, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Another thing to consider is that you don't have to be very high powered to have a mesh network, and therefore you might be able to skirt under any, at least U.S. laws on, you know, the power that you're putting out, and you can just not have to worry about getting the space allocated.
That's true. If you can work within existing spectrum because it's low power, maybe you don't need to wait on that. It's a good point. All right, let's move to our short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later. And Brad, we'll start with you. What do you see in your crystal ball?
All right, I see the beginnings of it right now, but I see a port that either is Thunderbolt or similar to Thunderbolt. And what that will allow is people to purchase what are called ALUs, auxiliary logic units, and basically buy these devices at Best Buy, Newegg, what have you, Apple.com, plug them into your computer, and now instead of having an 8-core machine, you have 128 cores in your machine. And you can daisy-chain them.
That was going to be my question. To be able to... So, all right. Does this eliminate the need to keep upgrading? Is that kind of what you're saying? I mean, we have storage concerns and other stuff, but pretty much we get the power plant we need for a processor for a much longer time, it sounds like.
Yeah, it kind of decouples the processor from the computer itself. And you can just kind of pull bricks out and add new ones and just get an updated processor. You'll still have to update your maybe your logic board to get a faster bus or your storage to get more storage. But I think CPUs will benefit from a port like that, and you'll be able to just buy them every other year and upgrade your computer.
This is the opposite of the way Apple's going, right? I mean, we see them like locking away the battery and the RAM and making it harder to you know, change things on a laptop. But that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen, right?
I like the idea of the modular computer, because you're talking about the processor, but it could be true for the graphic card as well, and pretty much everything. I like that idea of you say, Scott, that this will prevent us to upgrade each time, but basically you'll be upgrading every time you buy new stuff.
Except that's true.
In shorter terms.
Yeah, and the way I could see this working out is we would all end up using essentially dumb terminals again, some sort of interface, whatever that is, screen, keyboard, mouse for now, whatever it becomes. But really, the computer itself is always sort of with us. It's on our keychain. We go to a local library, we plug this thing in, bam, we have whatever processing power we have in our keychain. We also maybe have whatever storage we have in there. Maybe storage technology becomes more dense. I love the idea. I've always loved the idea of a future where the computer itself is not the thing we sit down to use. It's the thing we carried into the room and plugged into whatever display was available. It's very science fiction, and you see it in movies all the time. I see no reason why this couldn't happen.
It's basically a smartphone. Almost.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is in there. It's not as powerful, obviously, but just for contacts. And most people that are using computers nowadays, they don't need the computer. The tablet will do, and the smartphone as well. So me, I'm more thinking about like a post, as Apple said it, post PC devices will be the only way, the main way to access the internet eventually, the short term. It's not my prediction, but yeah.
Yeah, and if you have a mobile phone that isn't quite powerful enough, you can just plug one of these devices in and speed it up. And another axis to consider is that Moore's Law is kind of running out. And so
they keep saying that, but we never hit it. You think it's really going to run out?
10 years, you know, we're going to be at the molecular level. So it is going to run out. And so programmers
Or they find some other way around it.
Yeah, and that's parallelism. So writing to 128 cores, 512 cores, that's where it's at.
And then it wouldn't even need to be plugged in. It could work wirelessly. We might have enough wireless bandwidth that your processor could communicate with the terminal wirelessly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't even have to dock it. You could just leave it in your pocket, Scott.
Oh, it'd be so cool. I mean, Laurent makes a good point. What I'm describing is essentially what I have in my hand right here, but I want to see it go just a little bit further. I want to be able to take this, slide it into some kind of thing somewhere, and have a huge screen light up, and now I've got access to this thing in a very different way. And when I leave, I pop it out, and I go to the baseball game, and I still have my little screen, and I can still do stuff, and there's an internet connection, and all these things are happening on a very portable level. But it would be really cool if our phones could become this device like what Brad has described, but something that you could use in other environments. So it would become sort of writ large on a huge screen with a keyboard if you needed it to, or plugged into a small tablet. Maybe these become super thin and they come, you know, become almost cartridge like and modular in that way. I think that would be a very cool feature. Just take it wherever you go and then use it in places where it may be appropriate to have a different interface or a different, you know, way of looking at it or using it. I like that idea a lot.
All right, let's move over to you, Laurent. Our sooner rather than later short-term prediction. What do you got for us?
Yeah, mine is much more simpler. I'm talking about a file system. So perhaps inspired by the popularity of smartphones and tablets, I think that the access to classic root file system as we know it, so using tree-like branches with subdirectories, will disappear. Apple already entered the concept when they introduced macOS 10 Lion. And we see a bit of that concept with Launchpad. You see all the applications installed on your computer, but they're not necessarily exactly as they are in your file system with directories and everything. They also introduced that new document model that will allow you to manage multiple versions of the same document. So that's kind of the idea of not having to have a directory and a structure and just perhaps use search to get the information, to get your data. Microsoft has tried as well to restrict file access on Windows, I think on XP. You can always turn it off and access to the straight file access, but that's basically it. Because me personally, my desktop is a mess. I have less time to clean up all those files. Perhaps I have like 10 gigs of useless crap on my desktop, but I know they are important. But to try to clean up everything and put it all really clean in subdirectories, I don't have time for that. So I think it's gonna disappear basically.
Well, it's one of the reasons I get excited about Google when they talk about working in OS architecture and working on Chrome OS and other things, because I like I like how their approach to search and giving me results that they've been pretty accurate up to this point, telling me what I want or what I'm looking for. They're really good at that. So I would love to see some of that translated into a desktop model. But I agree with you, and I've always felt like there's too much directory structure that most of us as regular users just don't need to care about. It's just deep stuff buried way deep into a hard drive that nobody really needs to worry about. Now, there are going to be some out there who love to be able to have root level access to everything and want to be able to play with pathing and everything else. But I think for most of us, we just want to get to the thing we want. And I think the answer is somewhere we're doing okay with search and global search on computers now. I think it's somewhere better than that, and it's going to do with search before we hit that high mark.
And the directory structure is there mostly for us. I mean, that's not how the files are actually arranged. That they're not in little folders on your hard drive.
Right.
Brad, do you think we could just dispense with the directory structure and say, you know, if we come up with a good metaphor for the desktop, just let the file allocation table take care of the rest?
Well, this is what really has me excited about Windows Longhorn, actually. Oh, wait, that came and went, didn't it?
You mean Windows Vista? Yeah.
Yeah,
that new filing system, that got pushed off to Windows 7.
Oh, wait a minute.
Right. It's definitely still an idea.
Yeah. And that's what I love about Gmail, honestly, that there are no folders. There's labels, and you can apply multiple labels to one particular thing. You can't do that with subdirectories unless you're using links, and honestly, nobody does that.
Interesting. So folders really are just an analog for us anyway. They always have been, because we're something we're used to. In the real world, we got this folder here, and I want to stick this paper inside of it, and we just need to drop that old idea is what you're saying. Because we no longer, I mean, there's no longer, the metaphor doesn't apply as well, because like in Gmail, you can have 50 million emails, but the labeling system lets you, you know, take the 5 out that you need or the 10 out that you need, or that combined with search lets you apply a label to something else. But there's no physical storage happening in the metaphor anymore like it used to, or at least used to the way we used to like to have it feel with folders. So, yeah, I think I agree with this. You know, this the idea problem, that we could – well, go ahead.
The problem with the metaphor, the folder metaphor, is that you have the file on that folder, but it's not anywhere else. I have some files, some documents, some movies that I want to categorize in a genre, but I want it in another genre and maybe on another folder. So it works when you're using some application like iTunes or any media servers that can tag those files for you and put them in different categories. But like the folder, the file system, the classic file system doesn't make sense in 2011, in my opinion.
I end up using search, Windows or OS 10, either one, whichever one I'm in. I use search to find applications and folders 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm. But is your desktop clean, or are there like files everywhere?
No, it's fairly clean. Uh-huh. I've got a few things stored. I've got about a dozen icons on my desktop right now.
Okay.
Yeah, my desktop is full of icons because, well, first of all, I always have stuff covering my desktop, so I don't ever see it. And I don't need to know where things are on the desktop. It's just kind of my catch-all for everything. And then I just use, you know, I'm on OS 10, so I'll use Alfred or Quicksilver to search for them.
Yeah, I don't want to go plowing into a directory and try to remember where I stored, you know, the document that I'm looking for in some convoluted thing that I made up. But I just search for the name of it. Or even a word that I know is in it. That's how I find it. So I think you're right, Laurent. I think we've already moved beyond this. We just need the operating systems to catch up with this.
Let me tell you this real quick. I got a cool system I use for my desktop. And this is just, I'll throw this out. People want to take it, they can steal it and use it. But my desktop used to be a nightmare. Just icons left and right, everywhere, just filled. And I would put some important stuff in there and things that weren't important. Some stuff temporary, some stuff permanent. And I got away from that. What I do now is I use the desktop really actively. Every day I'm throwing, so I'm working on, say, a big master PSD file or a big master illustration file, for example. And I just need to get a sample off to a client to say, all right, you need to approve this. I'm throwing the cheap little emailable JPEG stuff out there, my proofs and stuff, just filling up my desktop every day and sending those off via email. The beauty of that is at the end of the day, I can just summarily go to the desktop and select everything and kill it, because none of it's a permanent file. They're all just reflections of something bigger that I've got stored in, you know, another major directory somewhere. And it's a great way to sort of use your desktop in a more active way, but not let it clutter to the point where that might be important, I should keep that, or that might not be. I never put anything that is a permanent file or something I have to keep forever on the desktop. So daily I've got a clean desktop. It's just a good way to work for me. It may be my workflow, but, you know.
Do you ever accidentally get rid of something important, though?
No, I haven't yet. You know, and having good backup and stuff helps me feel better about that. But so far, it hasn't really been a problem. I've just gotten really used to that being a working place where temporary stuff is put. It's stuff that gets emailed out. It's a quick sound file that someone needs. But it's never, like, master authoring files. And as long as I never keep those two in the same place, it works really well.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix, streaming you thousands of TV episodes and movies all over the internet. For $7.99 a month, you get TV shows, Mac, PC, iPad. You get them on your television through the Xbox, through the Nintendo Wii, PS3. Watch Netflix right on your phone, iPhone, and some Android phones, too. It's getting on more Android phones all the time. Now, a lot of people out there already have Netflix. So if you want to support Forecast, tell your friends. Netflix.com/twit is the place they can go to get 30 days free, even if they don't decide they want to keep it. They get 30 days of streaming TV shows and movies for free. It's worth checking out because there's so many darn places that you can watch the Netflix movies. All you need is a decent internet connection. So check it out. Tell folks about it. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. Let's move on to the long-term predictions, and this time we'll start with you, Laurent. These are sort of the in 100 years situation. What do you see farther down the road?
I think that the web will replace, maybe not 100 years, maybe a bit sooner, but will replace our memory and become one collective memory. I'm talking about the Columbia University study led by psychologist Betsy Sparrow. I don't know if you read about it a couple of weeks ago. It's called Google Effects on Memory, Cognitive Consequences of Having Information at Our Fingertips. So, instead of trying to learn everything, it seems that humans now prefer to learn where to access the information. So I don't like the idea of relying solely on Google, like the title is suggesting, or maybe Wikipedia, because we know how crappy Wikipedia can be. But to get basic information, but we're doing it anyway. And I think we're relying on technology to memorize useless information like phone numbers, important dates, emails is a good thing, and it's already happening now. Personally, I don't even know the phone numbers of my relatives. All of this is stored here.
So, well, that was the point of the study, was when we know it's stored somewhere else, we don't have as easy a time recalling it. If we don't think it's going to be stored anyway, we tend to memorize it. But once we know, I can look it up later, we don't tend
to remember. The part of the study, there was like maybe 80 or 90 person, and half of the group was told the data that you will be asked to type will be stored, will be saved. And they all typed the same trivia data, and half of them, the people that thought the data was saved, when they've been asked to repeat it, they couldn't, like, they failed miserably. So as I was saying, personally, I knew pretty much all the main buses schedule back when I was in college. And nowadays, even though I'm using public transport every day, I'm only relying on Google Maps to know the exact path to go from point A to point B. I don't know about you, if you use public transport or anything of the sort, but like for useless data. The only thing that I hope is I wish that all that space that will be free in our minds will be used to retain more useful information, which maybe is not the case, but finger crossed.
Well, this study, I think, Tom, remind me if I'm wrong, but I think this study actually came up on the show before, and we talked kind of at length about the idea that, at least my belief is that human beings we're geared and wired to survive. It's all about survival. And when we remember those things in the past, we have a good memory for a phone number or a good memory for a bus schedule, they're all of surviving, even if that just means making sure I'm at work on time or making sure I call my mom because, you know, she may be in trouble, or, you know, being able to have access to these people who can help me if I'm in trouble. And now we've got devices that kind of remember all of that for us. We've done is say, all right, well, that's cool. We'll just leave that info there. We don't have to clutter our heads with this. Now we'll move on to the other things that we can fill our heads with. And that's just another extension of the survival instinct. So what do you, this idea that we're not really losing the ability to remember anything. All we've done is offloaded stuff that's just numbers and addresses and the such, and we've moved on to more complex thinking.
I hope that's true. either that, or we come up with some sort of SETI at home to take care of all of the part of my brain that I'm not using anymore. But yeah, I mean, that is the idea, is we want to jump to the sort of sensational conclusion that, oh, well, if we're not remembering anything, we're dumb. And I heard a lot of outlets discuss this study that you're talking about, Laurent, in that manner, saying, oh, we're getting dumber. And the fact is, no, we're not necessarily getting dumber. We may actually be getting smarter, because we don't have to use our brain to remember simple things that can be offloaded. We can actually use it for more complex thoughts. Brad, do you buy that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just offloading our brain so that we don't have to remember as much. But if you look at the Getting Things Done book, the whole reason for doing that, and you know, taking everything you know and writing it down in a trusted location, is so that your stress goes away. Mm-hmm. And honestly, GTD is something that I'm failing miserably at picking up. But it's such a great way to think that, you know, even if I can't do GTD all the time, you know, if I take a note of something that's really important and put it into, you know, a Moleskine or my iPhone, then I'm not worried about it anymore.
Yeah, I have that experience when I make lists, you know. And what's funny is, I don't know if you guys have had this experience before, but when you think, oh, I have so many things to do today, and then you write it down and you look and there's like three things. it seems so much more in your head, you know, when you're catastrophizing about it.
I do that with email. I'll see a huge inbox full of 300 messages and just think, I don't know how I'm going to do this. There's probably 50 tasks in there that were due yesterday. And then when I finally sit down to do it, I find out I got to delete about 250 of them. And by the end of it all, I maybe have three or maybe five things I need to respond to. And I think it's a trap we get into. And perhaps part of the problem is that we've offloaded this other stuff and made it less important. And we think we can take on so much more now. So when something like an inbox fills up, or 20 people told us something we have to do, we've forgotten that we can still use good old-fashioned methods of getting this stuff out of our system, like writing it down on a piece of paper or whatever. So that what you say, Tom, happens, I think, to more people than they'll admit. It certainly happens to me today, in fact. Thank goodness.
Are you going to have more complex thoughts, Laurent, now that you can offload stuff?
Well, what I'm thinking is, what about the schools? Perhaps if we're not trying to memorize a lot of stuff like history or dates, important stuff. I'm not saying it's useless, but if it can be stored somewhere where we can access it, perhaps that the time in school will be more spent trying to think for ourselves instead of memorizing everything.
Thinking for yourself is something I think we're sorely lacking encouragement in a lot of the time, sadly. All right, let's move on to your long-term prediction, Brad. The sort of flying car sort of stuff. What do you got for us?
Well, we went through an industrial revolution, 150 years ago, and that was bringing energy efficiency to factories, basically. And from that, we've moved on towards houses and vehicles having energy. So we're kind of moving down in the scale. And I'm predicting an energy revolution where it kind of goes mobile. So the idea is that instead of having a cell phone that you use for a few days and then you charge it for a few hours, we're going to have things called ultracapacitors, where and that's going to be combined with superconductors. And hey, let's throw cold fusion into the play. And basically, you plug in your phone and 5 seconds later, it's fully charged.
Nice. I like this. I'd like to do this generally right now. Like, there's about five devices within my reach. I just wish I could just do something and make them charge without having to do anything about it or forget about it later or whatever. Laurent, what do you think about quick charging technology or technologies that allow you to, you know, for our devices to be less of a, oh, I got to plug it in, I got to do this thing every time, I got to sync it. Like, that whole business, should that just all go away? Should we move to a wireless world, truly?
I'm sure Tesla Motors will love the idea of the possibility to charge the battery of your car like very quick, because that's the main problem with their cars. But otherwise, if we're talking about like 100 years, maybe we won't need batteries anymore, or the batteries, everything will be the energy will be everywhere, and I don't know.
You're talking about wireless power?
Yeah, I'm dreaming about wireless power, and I'm wishing for it, but Yeah. Wow. Don't know.
Wireless power would be very dangerous in those quantities.
Yeah.
You don't want an ultra capacitor to be beaming wireless power?
Yeah, that seems bad.
So you're saying induction won't work that well?
I think we're gonna have to go with superconductors on this.
All right, we got to figure out some way to supercharge things wirelessly, those or distribute power. We've got distributed brain power. We've got distributed internet. Why can't we get sort of this wireless distributed electricity going on too?
Well, you could do that as well. It just wouldn't be as fast.
And I don't think I'm not even asking for something that would just charge my phone immediately. Or, it'd be cool if you could have kind of a constant charge, like the air around you was just charging it all the time and you never really use the battery. You're just sort of, that's there for backup only or whatever. But even if it meant I could only do it at home and there was some kind of unit here that did it and I could bring my phone home and just have it charge at the normal rate, that'd be fine with me. I just don't want to remember that, I didn't put it in the charger overnight.
If it's wireless, would it even have to charge fast? Would it just be constantly being charged? Brad?
I would say that, we're growing our power use over time. So that device of today, yeah, we could do that. But a device of 50, 100 years from now, it's going to be able to do some really cool things, and it's going to take a lot of power to do that.
Too power hungry. All right.
I'm still wishing for better batteries. Like this weekend, I was at a music festival. I was trying to film with my iPhone 4, like in HD, all the bands, and like the battery took, like it started 100%, and 3 hours later, there was like no more batteries. I bought a Mophie battery pack and tried it for the other day, but it's not enough. I'm using too much energy. I need more.
Ultra capacitors it is. Done. All right, time to move to the crazy ass predictions, and Brad, we'll stick with you. One really far out there forecast. What do you got?
Okay, this is a very serious prediction.
All right. It's not crazy. Well,
yes. So Jeff Bezos is building the Millennium Clock in a mountain. Basically, it's a clock that's supposed to run for 1,000 years. And I'm predicting that in 1,000 years' time, once that clock is running towards the end of its life, there will be a terrible movie in 3D with smell-o-vision that predicts the end of the world.
All right. That's definitely crazy ass. I hadn't heard about this Bezos thing. What's the point of it? What's the idea?
Along with Stuart Long? Is that the clock of the long now? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Wow. What's the point of that, Tom? What are they even doing that thing for?
Well, they're trying to make a point about long-term thinking because, one of the things that we are really bad at as a species is long-term thinking. So they're trying to show that you can, plan over more than your own lifetime and show the effects of what that kind of thinking does to you and what benefits you can get from it. So, yeah, if you just say, like, hey, they're building some really weird clock, then it doesn't quite make sense. You have to kind of get into the whole long-term thinking part of it. There's no short-term answer to that question, Scott.
Well, I was being very short-term with it, obviously. But, I mean, look, I love the idea of a 1,000-year-old clock. I think that's pretty cool. What will happen at the end of that 1,000 years is that's up for debate, I suppose.
Yeah, the chat room's saying it's actually 10,000 years. So it's really wild and crazy.
Jeez. Hope that mountain stays that long.
It's a long now.
I don't get the idea you're talking about, Tom. The thought. What is the thinking in building such a clock?
It's the principle of the kind of thinking you have to build the clock. The clock itself is not the point. It's sort of it's trying to show you the wide sweep of time. And
very, very philosophical.
It is entirely philosophical. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's also an engineering challenge. Having a material that won't rust after 100 years is a pretty good effort, but 10,000 years?
Yeah. And so that's an example of how it changes your thinking when you start to think on these long time spans. And the idea is if we always thought like that, or at least, maybe not always, but if we thought like that more often, we would build better things. We would build longer lasting things and we wouldn't get ourselves in the trouble we sometimes get ourselves
in. And also probably better decisions would lead to better life for perhaps those who are, you know, 500 years down the road from us.
Right.
I guess that's probably their ultimate point, is that it's not about who can make the oldest clock. It's about who can think past the debt ceiling getting raised, who can think past, you know, other issues of our day and come up with solutions or ideas that, that last longer than their lifetime. That's actually, that's pretty cool. Despite the fact that, again, it seems on the surface like clock, what the crap. But I think that's maybe the point, is we're supposed to go, oh, yeah, a clock, it represents this, and it's hard to do because of this and this and this. And 10,000 years is a long time not to rust or fall apart.
But I'm not sure if I like the idea of using such material, because if we start using such material for everyday use, like cars and stuff like that, it's going to be hard to recycle, I guess.
Well, maybe not. You know, those biodegradable bags seem to hold up pretty well, but then until you put them in the compost.
All right. Not so much.
Let's move over to you for your crazy ass prediction, Laurent. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap. What do you got?
The singularity. Humanity merge into one giant social network. We can have massive friend lists. We'll be able to like all sort of useless crap in an instant and feel good about ourselves. Lolcats will be everywhere. Only one identity through a biometric recognition. Spammers will be rejected on the spot. Fake accounts will be merely impossible, and we'll be able to generate like huge conversation about stuff like the weather on Mars, helping us to reduce the human aging process. And unfortunately, in Canada, this means that we won't be able to interact for more than 20 gigs per month because of the usage-based billing that will have long been approved. So,
wow, you guys really you guys really took the crazy ass and ran with it. You know what I said, Tom? This is awesome. I love these.
And will it be invite only? And how do I get an invite?
I don't know. I don't think it will be invite only. It will probably be implanted on everybody like once they're born. So you're on the social network starting at age zero, and you live with it.
It'll actually be forced upon you. You won't be able to avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brad, you want in?
Yeah. What's the rule going to be on artificial intelligence participating on this? You know, if we're talking wild, crazy-ass predictions, we could very conceivably put together a robot brain that completely mimics the human brain. Would that be allowed to participate?
Yeah, maybe they'll be shown in a different color, or maybe they'll only be pages and not having a regular profile. Or
Segregation, now you're talking.
Yeah.
I think
it's human nature to segregate, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I think that what will happen is those bots can be used when you don't want to interact, but you want to offload some of that brain power and do some more philosophical thinking about the long now.
Yep. And everyone will be forced to have Tom Anderson's avatar. That's the rule.
Why are we going to be forced to have Tom Anderson's avatar?
Just because it's a crazy-ass future.
In fact, Lee Foe in the chat room says, I read about it on Tom Anderson's G+ post.
Great minds think alike.
All right. Well, that is fantastic. Thank you both for sharing your visions of the future with us. But we're not done yet. We still have four questions.
We have four questions. These are four questions we ask our guests rapid fire style. They're not allowed to think too hard about them. They have to shoot from the gut and tell us how it is. Today, I'm going to ask Brad my questions. Brad, are you sitting comfortably, sir?
Yes, I am.
All right, here we go. If you could rename Ruby on Rails, what would you rename it to? What would you call it?
Rails on Rails. And
nice.
I kind of point at, you know, drinking some vodka tonic while you're coding.
Yeah. Nice. Rails on Rails. One unified language for all internet programming. Possible?
No. I think you can get to the 0.8 true language, not the one true language.
Mm. There you go. I knew that's what you'd say. Actually, I had no idea what you'd say. When we figure out how to translate animal language to English, what will the turkey say?
That call that you're using to bring me over, it's not really working for me.
Doesn't mean nice. What you think it means.
Yeah. Don't touch my waddle. You don't. It's not what you think it is. Let's see. Next one up. Last one. During the water wars of 2028, what future wars will we be talking about then?
Future wars after the war of 2028?
Well, because we get a lot of people predicting water wars. Yeah. He's asking, okay, once we get the water wars out of the way, what's next?
Yeah, what do we do then?
Let's go with the air wars and then the fire wars and then the earth wars.
Nice.
It's an elemental answer.
Someone in the chat room, by the way, said the turkey would say gobble, gobble just to mess with us.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's like, wait a minute. That didn't translate. This thing's broken. All right, Laurent, we are going to move to you for four questions. Are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Good.
Nervously, but comfortably.
Question number one. Will anyone ever listen to that crazy record we attached to the Voyager space probe?
No.
It's just going to float out there forever unused.
Yes.
That's sad. Question number two. What will be the next species to gain sentience on Earth? I'm not ruling out that there might be more than one already. I'm just saying the next one.
Elephants.
They have they're going to need smaller brains, though. I read this recently. The elephants, one of the reasons they're not more intelligent is because their brains are so huge. It takes time. It actually takes time for the synapses to fire from one side to the other. They can't think fast.
Yeah, but everything can be developed. So
yeah.
I'm optimistic.
They'll get some about
the zoo, and an elephant will go, give me more peanuts. And you go, it's happened. Prediction come true.
No, he's going to ask for an ultra capacitor. Is what he's gonna do.
I'm going to lose some geek cred for not knowing the names, but what about the trees in Lord of the Rings, right?
Oh, the Ents.
Oh, yeah. The Ents.
The Ents, that's right.
Question number three, how easy or hard will it be to replace body parts in the future?
In the future, meaning like 10 years from now, and 20 years from now?
Whenever it is that we're ready to replace body parts regularly, you know, once a
month. I think it's always going to be pretty hard. I mean, you're going to require a doctor to perform the surgery. But yeah.
So it's it's not something we could just like pop on ourselves at IKEA.
Never.
No.
Do you really expect like IKEA stuff to be like strong and I have an IKEA arm and can take over the world?
It's semi-disposable, you know, if it breaks. It didn't cost you that much.
Yeah, it will break in 6 months.
You have to assemble it yourself too with an Allen wrench. Question number four. Will they ever invent a low-carb poutine and will it be any good?
No. For poutine to be good, you have to have the carbs that comes with it.
That's
it's like
essential.
Diet Coke. It tastes like crap. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Good answer, by the way. That is.
So
that is
I guess Tom, you enjoyed the poutine when you came in Montreal, like what, 2 months ago?
Yeah. It's freaking delicious. Now I'm blanking on the place that I went because
you were all fat when you came.
La Banquise, yeah, that's it. It's a poutine restaurant.
Yeah, that's the place. The 24 hours, 7 days a week,
and that's all they serve.
And
they have like 40 different kinds.
Yeah, 40 or 30 or I don't know.
Anyway. All right, a bunch of them.
I always take the same one anyway.
Classic.
No, Elvis.
For those who don't know, poutine is French fries. Cheese curd and gravy, but then you can add things to it. What's on the Elvis one?
Elvis, I think it's ham. No, is it ham?
Drugs.
Bananas, peanut butter.
Like you can have like bacon, onions, fried onions, peppers.
It's good stuff.
Pretty sure there's beef. Like Elvis, there's ground beef. Ground beef, that's it.
All right.
Yeah, it sounds good.
It is.
Absolutely,
sounds really good right now.
Absolutely delicious.
Scott, you need to come to Montreal.
Okay, I'm coming up. You take me around. You take me around town.
I will.
All right.
Excellent.
Date. It's a date.
Done. Well, thank you guys for being on Forecast. I appreciate you sharing your predictions with us. Brad, let folks know what you're up to and where folks can find you on the internet.
Well, they can find me on Twitter. My handle is Listrophy. You can find me on my blog. It's pretty new, but it's called namingthingsishard.com. And if you're in the Ruby community, check out our Ruby conference, madisonruby.org. And again, if you're in the Ruby community, I'll be speaking at RubyConf down in New Orleans.
Excellent. And Laurent, let the folks know where they can find your works, both on and off the CBC.
Yeah, well, actually, perhaps it's better for them if they want to read actually English or listen to me speak English.
I bet we have to some French speakers in there, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I have a podcast called Headphones Required. So headphonesrecord.com is a music-dedicated podcast, but I talk about tech from time to time, so it might be interesting. On Twitter, I'm Laurent Lassalle in one word, so that's basically my name. And yeah, CBC, the link here, there is kind of hard. It's rc.ca/triplex, so T-R-I-P-L-E-X.
Excellent. Scott Johnson, did you have a good time?
Well, you know, I had a ball today. Great guests, as always. People want to follow. You know what? What they ought to do is tune into the morning stream as well, because Tom comes on there on Wednesday mornings. We tear it out, make a current geek out of it. But I got to tell you, that's one of my favorite things to do during the week. If you want to hear that and tons of other great stuff, join me and Brian Ibbett Monday through Thursday every morning at frogpants.com/TMS for the morning stream. I think people like it. Check it out.
All right, folks. And, of course, thank you for watching. Be sure to go visit our guests' works on the internet. Let them know what you thought of their appearance on Forecast. And you can email us and let us know what you thought of our show. It's forecastpodcast@gmail.com. You can also comment on our blog, forecastpodcast.com. We'll see you next time.
32 years. Way.